Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paulo Sotero, who is the director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Previously, he was the Washington correspondent for Estado de São Paulo, a leading Brazilian daily newspaper, and has been a regular commentator and analyst for the BBC, Radio Portuguese Language Service, and Radio France International. He also teaches at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paulo Sotero.
It's a pleasure to be back.
And Brazil is being shaken by these demonstrations and protests that are not just in the biggest city, São Paulo, where you are from and where you worked, but Rio de Janeiro, Salvador, Curitiba, Belém, Brasilia, the capital. So people are likening it to what's happening in Turkey and what has happened previously in Egypt and Tunisia. Are we seeing a Brazilian spring?
Well, the Brazilian Spring already happened more than 25 years ago. Brazil has been a democracy. What people are doing is they're exercising their right, their civil rights in a democracy to present their grievances. This started because of overreaction by police forces in São Paulo against protests of bus fare increases. The police got this wrong and attacked the protesters, and the population that is frustrated for many reasons decided that this was the time to assert their position and say, no, we have the right to protest in this country. We want that right. So that's where, you know, there's no relationship with what is going on in other parts of the world, in the sense that we are not fighting for establishing a democracy or against an authoritarian regime. We are living a democracy. It's a very bumpy moment, but is, in my view, a moment of promise where we can get better if we take the correct lessons, if leaders take the correct messages from this and act upon people's demands.
So if it's not an analogy in terms of what's happened in the Middle East, which it clearly is, doesn't work, but there is, though, an economic fairness issue at the heart of this, isn't there? That Brazil is a very polarized country between a very wealthy elite and an extremely impoverished bottom end of the economic scale. And so
you are correct up to a point. Brazil is a very polarized society, but it's less polarized today than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. There was, in this time, especially in the last 10 years, the rise of middle class in Brazil, almost 40 to 45 million people that used to be part of the poor people that are now part of lower middle class. The protest comes because the economy has stalled, the government has proved to be ineffective in some ways, and people, this young generation that has seen this promise of living in a relatively prosperous society with more equity, see now that this may not happen, and they, having tasted, this promise of having a better life, are now demanding it. They like what they seen, what they tasted. Now the problem is that the governments and the authorities have not, and the political class has not been able lately to deliver on those promises, and it's no surprise, therefore, that the protests start around a quality of life issue, which is public transportation in major cities in Brazil.
So when you see banners in these demonstrations with slogans like, "The people have awakened," what are they saying then?
Well, because until now, the people had relied on political parties, especially on the Workers' Party, a party that came from the people, has governed Brazil now for 10 years, has elected the most popular president in Brazilian history, President Lula, and all of a sudden, I think people have started to think that this connection is not working because the government has been particularly ineffective in enforcing policy, in creating policy, in ensuring that Brazil will continue to grow, that income is better distributed, with education issues are addressed, that infrastructure in Brazil is improved, and, you know, people very simply are communicated in Brazil every day that we have now moved up and we are the sixth largest economy in the world, or the seventh, depending on exchange rate used. But the fact, and then they go to their daily lives, they say, well, if we are that good, how come I have to spend 3 to 4 hours to go to work and 3 to 4 hours every day to come back from work in congested streets, in deficient public transportation? How come that we have so much crime in this country and that we see politicians that are really busy with their own lives and acting on their own self-interest and not on behalf of the people who elected them? So, and this is, you know, that we have seen signs of this coming over time. It exploded all of a sudden. Politicians in Brazil are completely perplexed. They are at a loss. They don't know what to make of this. And actually, even political analysts in Brazil that normally have, you know, very interesting opinions about everything are also quite strangely quiet.
Now, you mentioned politicians and even political pundits have been caught by surprise in Brazil. I take it that that would also apply to President Dilma Rousseff, who is a former guerrilla leader. She was imprisoned under the military dictatorship. And, of course, the police crackdown against people striking over a rise in bus fares that fanned the flames of these demonstrations. She's now trying to embrace the causes of the people. But is she behind the curve here, do you think, Paulo?
No, I not necessarily. You know, the issues that are the center and front are local issues. Okay, so people are not blaming President Rousseff. The protests are not against her. She has, I think, consulting with President Lula and others, she has reacted reasonably quickly. And yesterday, she said that Brazil has, is stronger because of those protests, and trying to associate herself with the concerns, with the causes of the protesters. Now, although this is important thing, and I think it's the right thing to do, there is also another side of this. Some of the protests yesterday evening in Rio and São Paulo have turned violent, and there were looting, there were acts of vandalism, and the media in Brazil from yesterday to today has begun to turn negative on the protests, and that could also have, you know, to appear to be too accommodating and not face acts of violence in major cities in Brazil could cost you a lot of support. So it's a difficult position. Not only the president, every Brazilian politician today are having a difficult to understand what's going on, to position themselves on this. And as far as Dilma Rousseff, I think that she has done reasonably well so far.
So it seems that a lot of the demonstrations have been focused on and have converged on the building sites for next year's World Cup soccer tournament in Brazil, which is being hosted by a country that we've always thought was soccer crazy and does incredibly well in soccer. The Brazilian team usually wins the World Cup. And the notion that so many of these protesters are against these stadiums that are being built, some of which in very small towns, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on these stadiums. And that seems to be a refrain throughout a lot of these demonstrations, is why are you wasting money on building soccer stadiums and not taking care of health and education and investing in infrastructure? And as you just said, the average worker in the Brazilian city spends, 4 or 5 hours a day in gridlock just getting to and from work.
Yes, don't get me wrong. People are using this, the soccer stadium, because, you know, we are having the pre-World Cup tournament. It's happening right now in Brazil. People are, as we speak, they are stadiums cheering for this team and for the Brazilian national team. It's very, present. There are costs, horrible costs, increases and overruns on all those projects. People are asking questions on why, for instance, we need to build a stadium in Manaus, which is being built for the 2014 World Cup, when the teams, the clubs from that city in the Amazon barely attract 6,000 spectators in their own regular game. So there is the white elephant syndrome here. There is also, you know, the fact that a lot of this is public money. Initially it was promised that, you know, the private sector would come along, etc. Didn't happen. Now, obviously, I hope that every good thing you said about Brazilian soccer and the national team is true, people, you know, but you know, this business about the protest against the building of stadiums can be taken a little bit too far. I think the majority of Brazilians are happy that the championship is going to take place in Brazil. It is a matter of a discussion that we have to have about priorities. You know, we could do the exact same thing and host those games and welcome a lot of people, but we could do this with less, you know, spending money more wisely. And it's a matter of execution of programs. It has been a problem in Brazil. Governments, both at the federal level, at the state levels, they announce very ambitious and nice programs. They look very nice on paper, but then there is a problem in implementation. You have the cost overruns, and then you know, people look at this and say, yes, we're going to have this party. It's very nice, but how about the long-term issues that really will determine where how my life will evolve, how my kids, my children's lives will evolve. Those have to do with education, those have to do with health care, having to do with actually daily life, life quality issues associated with mass transit, with safety, etc. And this is, those protests, I think they have become, you know, expressions of all of that, this profound anxiety and unhappiness, and politicians are completely perplexed and surprised.
Well, you mentioned that even some of the pundits and scholars have been caught by surprise. The New York Times quotes Fabio Malini, a scholar who analyzes data patterns and social media at the Federal University of Espírito Santo, and he's talking about how the largest protests are happening in cities which will be hosting the World Cup Games, and says, Brazilians are mixing soccer and politics in a way that is new, and minority voices are making themselves heard. So would you agree that that is new?
Yeah, well, the protests are happening in the cities that are going to host the World Cup, because those are the largest cities. You know, mm-hmm. We have to have the World Cup there. That's where the public is. Now, I think the professor there has a point. It's very interesting that is happening. The image of Brazil is that we are a very happy bunch, that we are always dancing carnival, and then we want to go to soccer fields, and this is all true. But at the same time, this is a very intelligent people that are seeing, you know, that there is an imbalance here between amounts of public money spending in this, on those issues, and on stadiums, that we could do the exact same stadiums, more probably in a different way. FIFA asked Brazil to do 8 stadiums, you know, to refurbish or build 8 stadiums, and we decided to do 12. Why? We could have done 8. We could probably have done things in a more organized fashion and saved lots and lots of money that could be better or could be invested in all those other areas. You know, we took care of the stadiums, for instance. The stadiums are all there and they will be there, but the public infrastructure, especially related to mass transit, is kind of behind. And, you know, this is the frustration, but I tend to think that this, if the protests remain peaceful, best remain engaged or calling the nation's attention to the issues that affect people's daily lives. I think this is an opportunity for growth. This is an opportunity for progress. This is a wake-up call to Brazilian political leaders, to the Brazilian political class. Now, Brazil, I insist, is a democracy. Depending on how we respond to this, Brazilian democratic institutions will be strengthened, or if there is no response, Brazilian democratic institutions will be weakened. This is up to us. It's up to duly elected leaders of the Brazilian people.
Well, just in closing, Paulo Sotero, the other part of Mr. Malini's quote in the New York Times is that minority voices are making themselves heard. And my understanding from talking to people in Brazil is that there is tremendous, we talked about polarization, but there's also sort of ghettoization, if you will. You have the poor favelas that are teeming with people riddled with drugs and lots of violence. And then right next door to them, you have these gated wealthy communities with armed guards, etc. And that is in many ways the face of the disparity in Brazil. It's sort of right up against each other. And so when he says that the minority voices are making themselves heard, are these the voices of the favelas?
I would say, as to the extent the favelas now are inhabited by members of this lower middle class, it is. Don't believe that the protests are fueled by poor people in Brazil. This is a middle class event. It is true that what he describes, and I think he is correct, minority voices, people, especially because this is the younger people, the people that have seen the opportunity to join this better world and that fear now that they may not get there, and they're dying the streets basically saying, no, this is our country, these are our streets, and let's keep moving, let's keep doing this. A lot of the problems that you have in, for instance, in urban spaces in Brazil, they are not the product of only of history. You know that Brazil had more slaves in its history than in most countries in the world, about 4 million compared to 900,000 in the United States, for instance. But that Brazil, over time, and even with the best of intentions, adopted public policies that exacerbated this segregation. Okay, what you described as favelas and high-rising buildings side by side, this is a direct product of bad public policies. Those images and living in those spaces, you know, makes the problem very visible, very present to Brazilian society, and is a constant invitation for society to address the issue and to resolve and to overcome this. There are new policies being conceived, being implemented, and I believe that if those protests, this is expression of a democracy working, if those protests highlight this and move a dysfunctional political class to action, I think the politicians, the leaders that do that will be compensated by the people, and Brazil will become a better country. Now, we are in the middle of this. It could go one way or the other. If you read Brazilian history, if you follow Brazil in the last 30 years since democratization and after 20 years with economic stability, you would adopt probably the more hopeful view that Brazil will be better because of what's going on in the streets there. And that is my hope, and that is my belief.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Paulo Sotero.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Paulo Sotero, who's the director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Previously, he was the Washington correspondent for Estado de São Paulo, which is a leading Brazilian daily newspaper, and he's been a regular commentator and analyst for the BBC Radio Portuguese Language Service and Radio France Internationale. He also teaches at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the domestic use of drones by the FBI.